Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albedo. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I'm fantastic, Carlos. Tropical storm warnings affected the play at the Deutsche Bank in Boston last weekend. A German, Caroline Masson, won in Canada on the LPGA Tour, and we're 1 week closer to learning Davis Love's picks for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. A lot of golf to talk about, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do it. I can't wait, although I know who's going to be picked by Davis Love the third. Everybody knows. But anyway, that's a good thing to talk about, and I'm sure everybody wants to know, and you'll be telling us something about that on the Bar 5 News. Also, you have on the Chip Shot, you have a golf travel spotlight. No, you don't want to miss that. And our practice range today is going to be the preview for the Web.com Tour Finals. But as usual, every week, we start with the weekend backspin, and the FedEx Cup playoffs is the thing of the moment. And Fred, Rory McIlroy, he's back. He won. What happened there?
Yeah, Rory came, he got going there on Sunday. He came out hot and just kept it rolling, put the pressure on the guys. They kind of fell back. The Deutsche Bank was scheduled for a Monday afternoon, Labor Day finish, but tropical storm warnings with high winds forecast forced the tournament officials to move the start back into the morning. Evidently, Rory McIlroy got up on the right side of the bed and likes playing earlier in the day because he made a big move early in his final round. The cool, breezy conditions in Boston probably made him feel like he was right at home in Ireland. Paul Casey was the 54-hole leader, but Rory flashed his old brilliance, even made a few putts. It seems working with his new putting coach appears to be paying dividends. Rory started 3 shots back of the leader, Casey, on Sunday, but started with 5 birdies on the front nine for a 31 and added 2 more on his back to post minus 15 in the clubhouse, with Casey still 2 holes behind. Casey threw in a couple of bogeys early in his round and could only manage pars. When it counted, Rory captured his first title on the PGA Tour this year. Will this signal a big finish for Rory to pocket the $10 million check? You know, he's getting married this winter, so he probably needs the extra money to pay for the wedding at a castle in Scotland. The win moves him back to number 3 in the world behind Jason Day and Dustin Johnson and just ahead of Jordan Spieth. It's also a very good sign for the European Ryder Cup captain, Darren Clark. With 6 rookies on the team, he desperately needs Rory, the champion golfer of the year, Henrik Stenson, and Olympic gold medalist Justin Rose to play big at Hazeltine. Stenson's been bothered by a sore knee, which he will rest this week by skipping the BMW Championship. Justin Rose inexplicably skied to a 79 on Sunday with not 1 but 2 triple bogeys, a double, and 2 bogeys on the back nine for a smooth little 45. Sounds like one of my scores, Carlos. I would look out for Justin Rose this week in Indianapolis, Carlos. He will want to atone for that poor showing. I think he is the guy to pick this week. What about the American Ryder Cup hopefuls, you ask? Matt Kuchar and Ricky Fowler both finished T46, but are moving on to the BMW. Bubba Watson, missed cut. We're going to see him at the BMW, though. J.B. Holmes, T33. Jim Furyk, T57. Carlos, your guy, Justin Thomas, just didn't make the cut. We are going to talk more about these guys on the Ryder Cup bubble a little bit later in the show, so I'm going to leave it at that. You also notice, Carlos, that 49-year-old Steve Stricker keeps on keeping on. He finished T24 at the TPC Boston and will join the top 70 at the BMW Championship this week in Indianapolis. He and Jim Furyk are the model for the professional golfer. Consistency, consistency, consistency. This was the final year with Deutsche Bank as the title sponsor for this event. The tour announced last week that EMC would assume the role going forward, and Carlos, you're going to talk more about that in the news section, but I believe you're going to tell us a little bit about the LPGA tournament.
Oh, definitely. But before that, yes, I have to talk about Rory McIlroy. Definitely. He's working now with Phil Kengen, who is the putting specialist, to help Henrik Stenson to his victory there at Troon. And they had said, you know, that the goal was to be ready for the Masters, but hey, he's ready right now. He was holding putts between 10 and 20 feet. Like, it was just a piece of cake. So watch out for Rory. Maybe he'll be making his first FedEx Cup playoffs win. So we'll see. But Henrik Stenson, it's unfortunately for him, he at least knows that it's a cartilage tear in his right knee that is bothering him. And it was bothering him when he won at Royal Tun and when he silver medal at Rio. So, wow, what a player. I hope that he gets fine. You know, he had surgery in that last knee in 2011 and then in last December. But this pair is in a different place. He's one that has fortune to withdraw, you know, from the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And last week he pulled out of the Barclays, and now he's going to be out of the BMW. But good news is for the European tour, for the European Ryder Cup team, is that he'll be fine for Hazeltine. So we'll see how that goes. But talking about the LPGA, Caroline Masson, she didn't do it the easy way. But in the end, it just made her first win on the LPGA tour that much sweeter. Masson came into the final round of the Man Alive LPGA Classic at 11 under, tied for fifth and three shots off the lead, and then promptly double bogey the opening hole. A lesser player may have thrown out her hands right there. But instead, Masson would birdie the next three holes on her way to a 9-birdie round, and at the end, to that zero in the column beside the LPGA's victories and her name. All told, Masson had 9 birdies, that ugly double bogey in the first, and 2 other bogeys that she reeled in one contender after another. Masson was on the practice range, on the practice putting green, awaiting a potential playoff with South Korean Lee Hyun Lee, who needed a 12-foot putt to make that happen before she could celebrate. Austin Aarons, Min Jae Lee, and world number one Lydia Ko stood in a tight circle whispering to each other. They were occasionally glancing across the practice green at Caroline Masson, who didn't know what was going on. But then over on the 18th green, Lee lined up her putt for birdie and hit. As soon as it rolled short of the hole, a signal went up, and Aarons, Min Jae Lee, and Ko pounced on their prey, pouring beers all over the surprising Masson, who said, "I didn't know. I thought it was champagne, but maybe because I'm a German, they pick up beers." But it was a lot of beer that they poured her. She finished at 16 under, but two pairings behind her were still on the course. A win without a playoff remained very much in doubt. After completing her round, she moved on to the practice range green by the clubhouse to rehydrate as Ian Lee, Inge Lee, and well number two, Arya Yutanagan, finished their rounds. Only after those three had failed to birdie on the 18th hole to force a playoff did she know that she'd earned her first professional title. Well, that and the beer being poured on her head as well. But Min Jae Lee, and Karin Kerr all tied for second at 15 under. Yutanagan bogeyed on 18 to fall into a tie for fifth with last year's winners Suzanne Pedersen and Lydia Ko at 14 under. Well, number three, Brooke Henderson from Smith Falls, Ontario, very nearby, was 1-under 71 on Sunday to tie with Marie-Emilie Blanc, who is from Cherbourg in Quebec, and she shot a 3-under 69 in the fourth round. Both finished 39th, tied for 39th, You know, players from around the world marveled at the large crowds there in attendance at Whistle Bay Golf Club, similar to the large groups of spectators at the Canadian Women's Open in Calgary the week before. I think that maybe, Fred, Brooke Henderson may have felt a little pressure to perform at home, and that might have to do with her average performances these past 2 weeks. And you finally learn, wow, she bring on the driver this week. She didn't use it that much, but unfortunately that bogey on 18 did her all, and she couldn't be there in the playoffs.
Yeah, I see she actually put a driver in the bag this week, and she doesn't win. She ends up dropping down. Yeah. You know, and media, and, you know, some of the media are starting to give her crap for not hitting a driver, which I cannot understand. She's won 5 times this year, right, including a major. She keeps closing the gap between herself and Lydia Ko on the race to the CME Globe and the money list. But why should she worry about using the driver? She's number 4 in scoring average, number 2 in birdies, number 13 in driving distance with a 2-iron. She still hit a 270 with a 2-iron. So, you know, I don't get it. You know, keep hitting that 2-iron, Arena. That it's working for you. Whatever it gives you confidence on the whole course, hit that thing and win. Forget about that driver. Hey, Carlos, we had a Champions Tour event last weekend. And Carlos Franco, probably the coolest guy on the golf course next to Miguel Angel Jimenez, won his first senior title. You know, after the LPGA Tour moved out of Calgary last week, the senior tour, the Champions Tour, took over the hotel rooms and moved right in for the Shaw Charity Classic. Carlos Franco rallied to collect his first Champions Tour title on a chilly Canyon Meadows golf course. Franco began the final round 3 shots behind defending champion Jeff Maggart. Franco shot his second straight 7-under 63 to beat Langer, Bernhard Langer, there's that guy again, and Michael Allen by 2 shots. You know, as we mentioned before, it's the end of the season, and we're getting on to the Charles Schwab Cup. So who's playing well? Bernhard Langer week after week. Franco carded 3 birdies in 4 holes on the front side, added another 4 birdies in his first 5 holes on the back, and then he birdied 18 to kind of seal the deal. That was Franco's 25th start on the Champions Tour. Langer shot a 64. He'd won last week, the Boeing Classic last week, for his 4th victory of the year and 29th overall on tour. Michael Allen shot 64-63 on the weekend to get into the runner-up position. Defending champ Jeff Maggart fired a pair of 63s in the first few rounds, but his 74 on Sunday left him tied for 6th at 10-under. Seemingly ageless Tom Watson shot 67 on his 67th birthday at the Shaw Classic to tie for 26th. He beat his age by a couple of shots on Friday, too, with a 65. John Daly, you remember him, tied for 53rd at 1-under after a 74. Is John Daly ever going to wear out his welcome in professional golf? Carlos, that's all I got on the Champions Tour.
Oh, my goodness. You know, they should rename the Charles Schwab Cup to the Bernhard Langer Cup.
They might have to do that. You're exactly right about that, yeah. And he could use his money to finance it.
Yeah, I mean, good. And the thing is that, you know, he has more Champions Tour wins in 29 than Carlos Franco has starts in 25.
So. Yeah.
But, hey, yeah, like you mentioned, Carlos Franco, he came out of oblivion. He hadn't won in 12 years. And great to see him win behind, like you mentioned, Miguel Angel Jimenez. He might be the coolest guy in golf. And talking about Miguel Angel Jimenez, he wasn't there because he was in Switzerland because they were playing in the Omega European Masters, and there, Sweden's Alex Noren, he says he believes he's playing the best golf of his career after defeating Scott Hand in a playoff to win European Masters for the second time. And you know what? He may be right. This was his second win this year after taking the Scottish Open by 1 stroke over Tyrrell Hatton in July. And Noren, he birdied the first extra hole from 25 feet at Transtour Sierre to claim his second European title of the season, 6th of his career, after he and him, the overnight leader, had finished tied on 17 under. He was aided by a brilliant front nine of 30, which included four birdies in a row. He had won this tournament in 2009, and he led by two shots with four holes to play, but then only threw three putt the 17th hole from long range after Hen had birdied the 15th. But in the end, the victory was his and his fellow countrymen, Magnus Carlsen and Ricard Calvert, to host him off with champagne to celebrate. England's Andrew Leith Johnston, he was three shots behind in third after a back nine of 30 in his 35, in his 65, was the guy people say, and it's not me, okay, people saying there that he should not be on the Ryder Cup this year, and that's Lee Westwood. He finished two strokes further back after a flawless closing 63. Westwood, who was given a Ryder Cup wildcard by the captain, Darren Clark, made seven birdies to search through the field. He said, quote, "It was a nice round with a couple of missed putts in there. And I didn't birdie 14 going in with an 8-iron, so it could have been a 60, really." End of quote. There was more good news for Darren Clark with two more of his team, Matthew Fitzpatrick and the defending champion Danny Willett, both shooting 64s to finish joint 7th at 12th, and 12th respectively. Fitzpatrick only made the cut on the mark of level par with four birdies in his final five holes on Friday. He was on fire going into the weekend. The bad news made for Darren Clark, the only one, because after the great news from Rory McIlroy, was that Andy Sullivan missed the cut. For other notable finishers, well, given how he managed, he was T24 and Fung Chai Jai T29.
Did you see the story that Matthew Fitzpatrick stole Ryder Cup captain Darren Clark's caddy? Matt Fitzpatrick's caddy was retiring, and so Clark offered to let his caddy, Jamie Lane, carry for the young Englishman at the Czech Masters, and that's where Fitzpatrick clinched a spot on the Ryder Cup team. So he really wanted to keep Lane on his bag, and through super agent Chubby Chandler, who works for both Fitzpatrick and Clark, he brokered a deal suitable to both that Lane would remove over to Fitzpatrick's bag. So Lane, he goes from one, from Darren Clark to a promising young guy. So Chubby Chandler, he's the guy in Europe. If you want to get something done over there, you just got to talk to Chubby. He can handle it for you. Hey, Carlos, let's talk just a minute about the Symetra Tour. The sister of LPGA Tour member Jessica Korda, Nellie Korda, earned her first professional win in Iowa at the Sioux Falls Great Life Challenge last weekend. We've been talking about the younger Korda this year because she decided to skip college and turn professional. It's looking like she may have made the right decision. This win moves her from 27th into 11th on the Volvic race for the card money list, with five events remaining on the Symetra Tour schedule. Only the top 10 earn LPGA Tour cards at the end of the year, but it looks like the younger Korda will join her sister on the big tour next year. LPGA Tour Q School first stage was held last week at Mission Hills in California. Daniela Darquea from Ecuador won medalist honors at 10 under par. She was the only player to post four rounds under par. Filipino Princess Superao, her name is Princess Superao, the 2014 U.S. Junior Girls Amateur Champion, and Sarah Schmelzel from Arizona and honorable mention All-America at South Carolina, finished in a tie for second at 9-under. The youngest player in the field, 17-year-old Nasa Hataoka, finished fourth at 8-under. A total of 92 players will advance to Stage 2 from 347 that entered the qualifier. Some of the more recognizable names, Maria Stackhouse qualified. She's moving on easily. She ended up with 2-under for the week. Three of the four Olympians in the field, Aditi Ashok from India, Tiffany Chan from Hong Kong, and Michelle Koh of Malaysia also advanced. So of the 92 that are moving on, 32 are amateurs testing the water to see if they want to turn professional or remain amateurs and stay in college. Carlos, that's all I have for the backspin for today.
And with that, we close our weekend backspin segment We're going to take our first short break, and then we come back. We have the Part 5 news, so don't go away. And we're back, and now it's time for the Part 5 news, and we have plenty of news for you. And Fred, you're going to start talking about definitely what is going to be maybe the topic going down for the rest of the month, and that is the Ryder Cup. Next week, U.S. Captain Davislav III will announce his first three wild cards, and everybody's talking about who he's going to pick and who should be there. A lot of people giving up their opinions, but I think that's a lock. Those four picks are locked. So what do you have for us about what the people are saying, all the experts and all the players and everything?
Yeah, I think it's such a lock. I kind of think they were talking about it just to get people to watch, you know. Anyway, who's Davislav going to pick next week after the DNW to fill the three spots? That's the question. Paul Anger said, when asked last week, that as many as nine guys would make excellent picks. Yeah, I don't think so. Talking on Golf Channel with David Duvall, Brandel Chambly said that Captain Davislav should leave Bubba Watson and Ricky Fowler at home and pick Jim Stewart and J.B. Holmes. I normally agree with most of the things that Brandel Chambly says. I know he's smart enough to know that he has to say some things that keep listeners wanting to watch him on TV, and he needs to make the occasional controversial comment, but this is just ludicrous to me. On top of it all, Duvall agreed wholeheartedly with Chambly, especially on the Furyk choice, who is currently number 23 on the Ryder Cup points list, and said Furyk is a lock to be on the team. A lock, Carlos. I just don't see it. They added that J.B. Holmes, who's number 21 on the point, or number 21, was undefeated. J.B. Holmes is one of the top finishers on the Ryder Cup points list, and he was undefeated in his only Ryder Cup appearance in 2008 at Valhalla with Paul Azinger as captain. I would argue here that for Kenny Perry and J.B. Holmes, Valhalla was a home game for them, and they both played out of their skin. The local fans helped them outdo themselves. One of the key points that Chambly and Duvall made was that Bubba does not have a good Ryder Cup record. In two appearances, he had played in eight matches. He has three wins and five losses. No ties. He's 0-2 in both singles and foursomes. All of his points have come in four ball matches. He is, though, number seven in the world. How do you leave the seventh-ranked player in the world off your team, I ask. Ricky Fowler is somewhat of a conundrum. He's number nine in the world, well-liked in the team room, and one of the best match-play golfers in the world. Plus, he loves the big stage and flourishes in it. He even rushed home from the Olympics to try to move into the top ten. He, along with Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth, were the only bright spots at Glen Eagles for Tom Watson 2 years ago. Fowler has to be on the team. Then we come to Matt Kuchar, number 17 in the world ranking, but next to Furyk and Stricker, one of the most steady performers in golf. He has been in two previous Ryder Cups and can partner with anyone in foursomes or four-ball. He's the perfect team player. Jim Furyk has had his time. Great player. Can't refute it, love him to death. J.B. Holmes will be remembered for his performance at Valhalla in 2008. He's had a good year. I will take Kuchar, Bubba, and Ricky all day long. Love has said he's depending on the eight team members already on the team and metrics, much like Billy Beane Baseball, to help pick his three guys. Well, all eyes are going to be glued to that announcement next week. Which three players will Davislav pick?
I think you just said it. Those three are going to be the ones that he's going to pick. I think that Bubba is going to be there. Matt Kuchar and Ricky Fowler, there's no doubt. Fourth is the one that I still think is Jim Furyk, the one that they're going to pick at the end of the day, unless something really, really strong happens this next 2 weeks and somebody steals the show and wins the FedEx Cup and takes it away from him. But I think they're going to give it to him. And that about the record, you know, Jim Furyk, 9-17-4, come on. He, like you said, to me, he had his time. I would put in there Justin Thomas. He didn't help himself by that miscut this last week, but he's done enough the rest of the year. Hopefully he will do well the rest of the way. Also, there's Ryan Moore is playing great. There's some other players that I would pick ahead of him. But anyway, we'll see. But to me, I agree with you. It's a lot to me. Bubba Watson, Vicky Fowler, and Matt Kuchar is going to be the announcement next week. There's no surprise there at all. Hey, let's talk a little bit about some European Tour news now that we're talking about that. Let's talk about Europe. The European Tour announced part of its 2017 schedule on Monday, including the dates for the two early season UAE tournaments. The Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship will be the third official tournament of the season after events in Australia in December and South Africa in mid-January. The tournament held at Abu Dhabi Golf Club is set to run from January 19th to the 22. The tour will then visit Qatar for the January 26th to the 29th event in Doha before returning to the UAE to complete the Desert Swing on the tourist calendar with the Omega Dubai Desert Classic from February 2nd to the 5th. It will be the 28th edition of the tournament held at the Emirates Golf Club. The current European Tour season will conclude in 2 months with the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai at Jumeirah Golf Estates from November 17 to the 20. As for the rest of next season's schedule, in a release there, the European Tour's Chief Operating Officer Keith Waters said, and I quote, "In keeping with recent tradition, we unveiled the schedule in its entirety during the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai in November." Worth noting is that Waters in the European Tour release also said, quote, "The initial sector of the 2017 European Tour international schedule once again reflects the global nature of the European Tour, taking in 10 different countries over the first 5 months of the season," end of quote. You know, that right there is one of the things I love about the European Tour and also about the LPGA is that they are truly global tours. And they go reach beyond a single geographical region. And as I said before, it might seem far-fetched, but because of the big money the PGA Tour makes right now, but these two tours, by having that global reach, and with the up and coming of the Asian marketing golf that they're really going for, and the four initiatives that they're talking, you know, they'll become bigger than the PGA Tour in a couple of years if the PGA Tour doesn't do anything. And one more piece of news from the European Tour is that fans at the Omega European Masters were treated to a most unique exhibition event after play on Saturday as Miguel Angel Jimenez, Lee Westwood, and Danny Willett played two holes using only Hickory golf clubs while decked out in traditional 1930s golf attire. In front of throngs of Swiss golf fans, Westwood took home the Cowbell Trophy for the Hickory Challenge, a concept created by the prestigious golf tournament to celebrate its 70th anniversary. The former world number one from England also faced stiff competition from Paolo Chirici, the 2013 World Hickory Champion. All four players were dressing 1930s plus fours and newsboys caps, played the 10th and 18th holes, par 4 and 5 respectively, at the golf club's Grand Suites here with traditional Hickory clubs. And the two-hole challenge was packed full of dramas from the outset, with Lee taking it at the end and flexing some muscle in celebration of his victory. All in all, you know, it was great fun. Two holes had a different feel to it, and it was an enjoyable moment for the fans there. The event was set up to commemorate the 70 years of the Omega European Masters that has been hosted in Crans-Montana, making it the longest-running golf tournament at the same venue in Europe, and the second longest running in the world after the Masters tournament. The vintage clothing and Hickory golf clubs were a nod to 1939, which was the first year that the tournament was played at the golf club Grand Tours here. One last thing, Fred, you know, you are golf's most interesting man when you can look like a rock star in any outfit, including vintage clothing, and that is what Miguel Angel Jimenez did.
Hey, Carlos, what, you know, I saw Danny Willett was over there at the Omega Masters rather than playing in the FedEx Cup. I think he was ranked number 75 here in the U.S. So, I mean, he could have gone at least for the first couple tournaments probably, you know, what was the story on him playing over there and not playing in the U.S., you know?
Well, I know for a fact that all but three of the top 30 players in the world were in the FedEx Cup. Danny Willett, who was at number 18, Rafa Cabrera Bello, who is at number 27, and Chris Wood, who was ranking 30th, were the only ones that were not playing. And that's because Rafa Cabrera and Chris Wood, well, they are not members of the PGA Tour, and thus they were not eligible to compete in the FedEx Cup playoff. And although Willett was eligible, he was so far down the FedEx Cup standings, he chose not to compete. He is competing for the race to Dubai title, which he's leading. And right now, this is the first year that he really has been trying to get into the PGA Tour. So really, his schedule was more the European Tour based. So he didn't feel yet that he has that kind of a grip of going to the PGA Tour. So he's trying to concentrate on winning the race to Dubai, which he was close to winning last year, and that's the reason why he's not here.
Huh. Kind of surprising, you know, when you're playing for the really big bucks here in the FedEx Cup, that even you know, the race to Dubai is nice money, but it's not anything close to what they're playing for over here. So, hey, Carlos, let's talk about the LPGA Tour for a minute. Last year, the main storyline for the women was the number of young players that dominated the tour. This season, the young women are 1 year older, and with only a handful of events remaining on the 2016 schedule, only two American women have won titles this year, plus no American woman medaled at the Rio Olympics, as we know. Lexi Thompson won in Thailand way back in February, and Brittany Lang won the U.S. Women's Open in July for the only two American wins. Meanwhile, Ryuji Tanigarn with five victories, Lydia Ko with four, and Brooke Henderson and Hannah Yang, each with two, lead the women's golf world currently. Envy Park, Lydia Ko, and Shanshan Fang won all the medals at the Olympics, while the Americans, Stacey Lewis, Jeremy Pilar, and Alexi Thompson, finished all out of the medal picture. Hey, I got a question. Brooke Henderson's from Canada. So isn't that like a part of the United States? Can the U.S. count her two wins on there, Carlos? I was curious about that. International players, Lydia Ko, Ryuji Tanigarn, and Brooke Henderson, are dominating the LPGA right now with 11 wins between them. They're also 1, 2, and 3 in the Rolex ranking and the race to the CME Globe. Aria's beginning to look darn near unbeatable without a driver in her bag. Where are the U.S. wins going to come from? Well, Stacey Lewis has been playing better of late. She's number 9 on the money list and has 8 top 10s, but the former LPGA Tour Player of the Year does not have a win in 2016. A married lady now, she may not have the desire to grind it out, and that's made her dominant in the past. Brittany Lang is the leading American on the money list at number 6. The big check she got at the U.S. Women's Open made her year as well as her career. Don't look for too many more wins for the 31-year-old Lang. Lexi Thompson is only 21 years old and is number 13 on the money list. As I mentioned, she did have one win earlier this year and has not finished lower than 8th in 4 of her last 6 starts, but she's inconsistent and a bulky putter keeps her from winning more. Zarina Piller has had a solid year and is number 15, plus Mo Martin at number 17. Like Jim Furyk and Steve Stricker on the men's tour, she just keeps hitting fairways and grinding out made cuts, but she's never going to be a dominant player. Paula Creamer, Christy Kerr, and Morgan Pressel all have other things in their lives more important than golf to worry about. Jessica Korda is having a down year for her, but she does have 4 career wins, and at 23 is still young enough to catch fire. Once the future of American women, Michelle Wee appears to be near the end of her golfing career. Injuries and poor judgment as a youngster, she made a ton of money, but not a lot of trophies. The next great crop of American women golfers has yet to show up to compete with the likes of Tanigarn, Ko, and Henderson. They're out there, and that's why we're following the Symetra and the NCAA golf. We, like the LPGA Tour, are looking for the next great young woman golfer. Hey, Carlos, as a sign of the times, did you see that the LPGA is opening a retail store in Korea? Timing is everything, you know. And with the new licensing partner, MK Trend, opening the first store right after Envy Park won her gold medal, what timing? John Podani, Chief Commercial Officer for the LPGA, said, obviously, we had no control over what happened at the Olympics, and with LPGA never being more popular in Korea, we feel like it's a good time to take a big step like this with our brand. Yeah, I think you're probably right with that, Carlos. The Korean people are really nuts about their women's golf, and Korean women's golf is really, really strong. So opening stores in Korea for the LPGA seems like a no-brainer to me.
The timing couldn't be better with Indy Park winning and having so many women in the top of the world rankings right now. I mean, they look like a factory, and add to that there are some male golfers now that are also up and coming in the PGA Tour and the European Tour. And, hey, that's the spot to go right now. The timing couldn't be better there. And before I move to some news from the PGA Tour, I just wanted to clarify one thing about Danny Willett, the question that you asked me. He wasn't a PGA Tour member until after he won in Augusta, and the only PGA Tour starts thereafter came at the final three majors and the Players' Championship. So that's why he finished the regular season 75th in the FedEx Cup points race. And he, like I told you, this was his first year in trying to make the PGA Tour start, and he definitely – I don't think he's still a very – he's still always, like, inclined to play more in the European Tour. And you said about the money, but hey, the European Tour is with Keith Pelley is trying to bring up some of those tournaments up to par with the PGA Tour in the money. So look out, maybe in the next few years, like I've been saying, there's going to be not only him, but some others are going to be staying there in that side. Do you want to say something about this before I can move?
Yeah, you know, Carl, I mean, Pelley's got a perfect timing right now. I mean, it looks like he's back in Willett, and I'm sure they paid Willett a bunch of money to get him to come to the Omega Masters. I'm sure that happened. That was kind of what I was alluding to. But with Rory if Rory makes a comeback and really does what he can do, if, you know, with Justin Rose getting the gold medal, you got Henrik Stenson coming off the win at the British Open. You know, if he does a good job marketing those three guys and he can get them to come and play some events in Europe, he could turn that around really, really quickly if he can get the TV stuff that he needs to get them the exposure and get you sponsorships to get them the money. And I'm sure he's trying to use that to leverage that to get the sponsors, more sponsor money. So, I'm sure that's what he's banking on, Carlos.
Oh, totally. I have to agree with it. Hey, sir, just last week, we talked about the future of the Deutsche Bank Championship since the Taylor title sponsor ended their commitment this year. And we said it wouldn't be long before a big company take over the sponsorship. Well, it didn't take much time. The future of the second FedEx Cup playoff event is no longer in doubt, with technology giant EMC taking over as title sponsor of the Boston area event from Deutsche Bank. The PGA Tour announced the change on Thursday, a day before the 2016 edition of the event. The new name of the tournament is still to be determined, but the event will continue to run from Friday to Labor Day on Monday. There are reasons for not having a name yet or further details to be due, and this is just my opinion, due to the fact that last year, Dell announced plans to purchase EMC for $67 billion, and that deal is expected to be finalized tomorrow. Coming from the technology world like I am, I doubt that Dell would change EMC's name. Dell is based in Austin, Texas, and is already the title sponsor of the WGC Dell Match Play Championship. And with EMC, whose global headquarters are in Hopkinton, which is just outside of Boston, and have been involved with the event since its start in 2003 as a Founders Club partner and became a local presenting sponsor. But now as the title sponsor, a lot of things could happen to maximize the marketing potential of EMC using it as a launching pad there in the FedEx Cup playoffs. So I think it'll still remain EMC, but they have to wait until tomorrow until that deal is finalized to get all those details going. And other piece of news there from the PGA Tour. This one I really like it very, very much. According to Jeff Shackelford, Rex Hoggard reported last week on final confirmation that the top 125 money exemption is almost officially dead, with only FedEx Cup points will be used to determine tour status starting in 2017-2018. Yes, finally. Hey, more intriguing, there was this note from Hoggard's hotline wrap of the week, reporting that the PGA Tour asked its players' advisor council to consider reducing the size of its exempt membership from the long-time 125 number. Unless, of course, this is the first sign that after years of maximizing playing opportunities and offering no shortage of exemptions, waivers, and other avenues to play, this suggests a desire to actually reduce some of the bloat. And like Jeff Shackelford said, it's true. The PGA Tour is indeed bloated, I mean, starting by the fall series. While it's wonderful that so many opportunities exist for a pro golfer to cash checks as a product, the tour has been compromised by overextending itself at select times of the years, undercutting longtime sponsors for the gain of landing new ones and sometimes wearing out its welcome in the crowded sports marketplace. Yes, they are. Shackelford asked if this could be the first discussion having made the effort by the Monahan regime to trim some fat, tighten some screws, and signal an end to the relentless growth mantra of the last decade. Well, Fred, he hopes that is the case, and so do I, and I suggest for once start by eliminating those news fall events.
Yeah, I was looking earlier at the the web.com tour. We're going to talk about that a little bit, the guys that are in, and the guys that were not in the top 125 to get in the FedEx Cup playoff, but there were six guys, actually, that finished in the top 125 in the money list, but not in the top 125 of the FedEx Cup point list, so didn't get into the playoffs, that are playing in the web.com tour finals, maybe a little bit. Steve Marino, Morgan Hoffman, Bud Cauley, Chad Collins, and Retief Goosen will not, fell into that category. So next year, even though they were in the top 125 in the money list, they're not going to keep their card. They're going to have to get it back through the web.com. Carlos, I got a cool story here. One of the best stories in golf ever. Roger Maltby was reunited with a long-lost check. And as mentioned, this is kind of from the lost and found. His check was a $40,000 check from the 1975 Pleasant Valley Classic. You know, golf fans today are more familiar with Roger Maltby as an on-course announcer for NBC. He's the guy Johnny Miller asked, "What's he got, Roger?" Maltby, who won five PGA Tour titles, including the very first Memorial Tournament, was much more famous for his championship celebrations off the golf course than for his golfing abilities. He was having one of his better parting nights after getting his second consecutive PGA Tour win in 1975 because he had won the week before at the old Quad Cities Open. At the Pleasant Valley Classic, he made the cut on the number on Friday night and then proceeded to post a 67-66 in very windy conditions on the weekend and ended up winning the tournament. He retired to a local watering hole, T.O. Flynn's, to enjoy the fruits of his hard labor and show off a check to various patrons. It was about that time that Roger's mind went a little fuzzy and he went back to his room, and when he woke up the next day, he read the paper that he had won, but when he reached in his pocket, no check was to be found. So with the assistance of his caddy, and I'm sure a few Alka-Seltzer, Roger first called the bar and asked if anyone had turned it in. but no luck. The next call was to tournament officials asking if they could cancel the first check and cut him a new one for $39,000 and give him the remaining $1,000 in cash. And not having any credit cards at the time, Roger had burned through $600 the night before and just needed a little traveling cash. The original check was eventually found, but now being worthless, Malby told him just to keep it. Pleasant Valley officials got hold of it, hung it on the wall in the clubhouse for several years before it got tucked away in a drawer somewhere. Well, this year when Roger showed up to work at Deutsche Bank near Boston, Pleasant Valley officially reunited Roger with his long-lost $40,000 check. Roger said, "In many ways, that little slip of paper has defined my adult life. It has weathered a whole lot better than I have." Roger Malby was a pretty good golfer, Carlos, but a much better partier. And this makes for one of the better stories in PGA Tour history. And that is the Par 5 News for September 6, 2016.
And with that, we close this segment. Now we're going to take our second short break. And when we come back, we have the Ship Shot where Fred is going to take a golf travel spotlight. So don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back, and now it's time for our Ship Shot segment, and today we'll have Fred placing the golf travel spotlight on the Ogle Bay Park Resort, which is located in Wheeling, West Virginia, and close to I-70 for easy access. It is an important mansion and large estate that features three 18-hole golf courses and a par-3 course. It offers something for everyone in the family, and it's a great vacation value in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. Fred, what do you have for us about the Ogle Bay Park Resort?
Well, you know, Carlos, I've been doing a little bit of traveling and seeing some resorts and talking to some people, and I was really impressed by Ogle Park Resort. I've known about Ogle Park for probably 30 years, but just never had the occasion to go there. I used to have some friends that went over there every year. And, you know, when most golfers think of West Virginia for golf, they think of the Greenbrier, Glade Springs, or Stonewall. But another historic location that will impress is Ogilvy Park Resort. Cleveland industrialist Earl Double Ogilvy officially purchased land in 1900 and set about improving the estate for the next 25 years. Upon his death in 1926, he willed the land to the city of Wheeling, with the caveat that it had to be used for public recreation. Today, this beautiful property is a municipal park owned entirely by the city, but don't let that fool you. This is a first-class golf destination with a myriad of activities to please every member of the family. Ogilvy Park is completely self-supporting and has a continuous modernization program that touches all areas of the resort. From spacious rooms are constantly updated. They'll please even the most discerning traveler. The courses undergo scheduled renovation and are maintained to the highest standards. Three championship golf courses, the Palmer, the Jones, and the Crispin, will challenge golfers of every ability. Plus, with the courses sitting atop a mountain, I defy anyone to find a level lie. In addition to 54 holes of championship golf, Ogilvy Park Resort also boasts a par-3 executive course and a driving range for some extra practice. The Crispin course is the oldest of the three and offers resort guests the chance to experience mountain golf at its finest. Elevated tees provide panoramic views of the adjoining valleys and hillsides. The Robert Trent Jones Senior course opened for play in 1971, and the Arnold Palmer course was added 30 years later. Both of these courses sit adjoining to one another and form this Spiedel Golf Club inside the Ogilvy Resort Park. Golf is not the only attraction at Ogilvy. It boasts 11 tennis courts, Shank Lake for boating, fishing, and kayaking, swimming, horseback riding, miles of trails to hike and bike, the mansion and glass museums, the Good Zoo, plus an environmental center. And then don't forget, there's skiing and snowboarding in the wintertime when you can't golf. The Winter Festival of Lights is not to be missed and takes hundreds of workers more than a month to string millions of lights around the park every holiday season. Olga Bay Park Resort is the perfect vacation spot for families. Dads can spend time on the golf course while the kids can explore the pool, zoo, or other activities. Over the past couple of years, I've had the opportunity to visit several West Virginia golf resorts, and each time I've come away impressed with the quality and beauty of the accommodations. Ogilvy Park Resort was no exception. You can visit www.ogilvy-resort.com. That's Ogilvy, O-G-L-E-B-A-Y-resort.com for more information for their rates, stay-and-play packages. They've got everything going on there. It's just a great family value, Carlos.
And there you have it. That is our Chip Shop, the Golf Travel Spotlight in Ogilvy Park Resort. Let's take one more short break, and when we come back, we have the practice range, and we're going to preview for you the wet.com Tour Finals. Don't go away. And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range, where every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us take our shot at it. This week, we have selected the wet.com Tour Finals preview. And, you know, the FedEx Cup playoffs, where the PGA Tour was the first one to bring in this kind of series at the end of the season, to bring in some more drama and how to finish, tie that season and give something else extra. Then the European Tour followed with the Race to the Wire. Now the LPGA also has the Race to the CME. And there's races all over, and the web.com Tour Finals, they have been now in existence since 2013 when the PGA Tour moved to a wraparound schedule and eliminated offering PGA Tour cards in Q School. The four-event series runs concurrently with the PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs, and it determines the fate of 50 PGA Tour cards. A total of 150 players qualify for the series. The top 75 players on the web.com Tour regular money season list and the players who finish 126th through 200 on the PGA Tour regular season FedEx Cup points list. That is the first 75 players who didn't qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs. While the fate of 50 PGA Tour cards are decided in the web.com Tour Finals, the recipients of 25 of those cards is already known before the series starts. The top 25 players on the web.com Tour regular season playlist automatically earn PGA Tour status for the next season. Alternately, then 125 players are competing in the web.com Tour Finals for another 25 cards. And those are determined based on the total money earned during the web.com Tour Finals events. As for the top 25 in the web.com Tour regular season money list, they are playing in the series to determine their priority order for the start of the next PGA Tour season. You know, priority order dictates the order in which players gain entry into the most PGA Tour events. In other words, the better a player's priority ranking is, the more likely they are going to get into a tournament. The top 25 on the web.com Tour regular season money list are part of a separate money list from for the web.com Tour Finals, however. Instead of starting at zero, like the other 125 players on the web.com Tour Finals money list, those players start with all their money they have earned in the web.com Tour regular season, which can be added to the web.com Tour Finals. In addition, a player who finishes in the top 25 on the web.com Tour regular season money list can improve his priority order for the next season by finishing higher on the web.com Tour Finals money list. As a reward, two players earn fully exempt status for the next PGA Tour season, meaning their status is not subject to money-based priority reshuffles at the key points throughout the season. Those players are the winner of the web.com Tour Finals money list and the player among the top 25 web.com Tour regular season money list to earn the most combined money between the regular season and the finals. Both players are also exempt into the Players' Championship. But altogether, the priority order for the 50 cards alternates between players on the web.com Tour finals money list and the top 25 players on the web.com Tour regular season money list, right, based on the combined money between the regular season and the finals. And who's playing there? There's a lot of people, a lot of big names that have missed the FedEx Cup playoff, but I believe, Fred, there's only one name is going to capture all the attention. That name is Andrew Beef Johnson.
Yeah, I think you probably hit that. But, you know, there's another guy that's got a pretty big name, too. Well, a couple guys, actually. Bryson DeChambeau, I think, is going to garner some attention in these things. If he could happen to win one or two of these deals, it would secure his card for next year. And you know, he was really close to getting it with just the exemptions he was allowed this year, but just came up a little bit short. So if he's kept his game sharp, he should be able to get through easy enough. Hopefully he'll contend. You know, Wesley Bryan is already a member of the PGA Tour because he had three wins and ended up finishing first on the web.com tour money list. So he gets that one of those golden tickets you were talking about. Ollie Schneiderhans finished number six on the top 25. And, you know, we know that name from some of the majors this year. He played really well. Seamus Powers from Ireland, you know, we saw him at the Olympics play real well. So, you know, we're looking for him to make it to the PGA Tour next year. Kevin Tway, the son of Bob Tway. We've been talking about him for a couple of years. He's been up and down a little bit. Andrew Svoboda is a former PGA Tour winner. Ted Potter Jr., another former PGA Tour winner. So those are the guys from the web.com tour, the 75 that are going to be playing. And then you've got from the PGA Tour, you've got Matt Jones, who was took the unenviable position of number 126, just one spot shy of keeping his card. Scott Stallings was forced to miss a substantial portion of 2016 due to suspension and is forced to re-earn his tour card. Chris Stoud, we've heard that name before. He's been a solid performer on the PGA Tour for several years, but he's forced back to the web.com tour finals. Then the other names, I'm sure you know these names, Carlos. Stuart Appleby, Sam Saunders, Will McKenzie, Camilo Villegas, Jason Gore, Brendan DeYoung, Tim Herron, Brian Gay, Rory Sabatini, Rod Pampling. So, you know, some pretty good names in there. Some guys trying to stretch their careers a little bit longer. You got some veterans here that haven't quite been able to compete this year for whatever reason, maybe injury, maybe just having an off year, maybe a couple putts just didn't drop when they needed to. But you also got these other younger guys playing for priority for better spots on the tour, and which is really a big deal, especially earlier in the year. So then you got some international guys who were given some spots in the finals. You got Kiridech Abibanrat from Thailand, who we see in different tournaments around the world from time to time, pretty good player. I mentioned Bryson DeChambeau. He's looking to be on tour full time next year. Bobby Wyatt, who finished fourth at the Zurich Classic on a sponsor exemption. You got KT Kim, who won five times on the Japan Golf Tour in 2015 and played in three or four majors this year. He did end up T21 at the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, so you can play a little bit. You know the name George Koetsi from South Africa. You know, he's a good name. Gregory Birdie, also another great name, does well on the European Tour. So, and then you come to Andrew Beef Johnson. And, you know, he's got this new sponsor, Arby's. Where's the beef? We've got the beef. We've got the beef. That's it. We've got the meats. And so, you know, it'd be perfect for him to get over to the PGA Tour and take advantage of that. So, he's going to be closely watched. The events, Carlos, there's four events. You got the DAP Championship this week in Canterbury Golf Club over here in Cleveland. Then they go to Boise, Idaho for the Albertsons Boise Open by Kraft. Then they come back to Columbus for the Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship at the Scarlet Horse at OSU in Columbus. And then they take a week off, and that's when the Ryder Cup will be played. And then after the week after the Ryder Cup, they come back and play the web.com tour championship October 6th through the 9th on rejuvenated Atlantic Beach Country Club near Jacksonville, Florida. And each one of these tournaments carry a $1 million total purse with $144,000 going to each winner. Last year, Ches Reavie earned the most in the tour finals with just over $323,000. Robert Oppenheim got the 25th card with $32,200 in total earnings for the four events. So just a little bit about the course this week that you'll be seeing. It's a great old historic golf club, Canterbury, that has a long and distinguished history. It annually ranks among the top 100 golf courses in the U.S., according to Golf Digest, Golf, and Golf Week magazines. And it's one of only two courses, Carlos, which Oak Hill, revered Oak Hill in Rochester, New York, that have hosted all five of the men's major rotating championships, the U.S. Open, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Amateur, the Senior U.S. Open, and the Senior PGA Championship. It opened in 1921. It's a par 71. Can be stretched to over 7,100 yards, which is pretty long for a par 71. So all these events will be aired on Golf Channel. You can watch them. We got some guys that are trying to get their cards for next year. You got veterans trying to keep their career going. You got young guys trying to make it to the bright lights and big checks. And it's always a lot of fun to see the interaction and see who does well. And so over the next 5 weeks, along with the FedEx Cup here for another three events, and then we've got that to watch too. Then we got the Ryder Cup. Man, there's a lot of golf coming in next month, Carlos.
A lot of it, and like you mentioned also there are two players other than Andy Reese Johnson that I'm looking forward to see, of course, Wesley Bryan. As you mentioned, he's also already a PGA Tour member, so he doesn't have to worry about all those things about the priority list and all those things that the others are going to be. But also, Ole Schneider, James, because he's the only member of that famous 2011 class that hasn't gone on, up on tour in force like Jordan Spieth, Emiliano Grillo, Justin Thomas, Daniel Berger, Patrick Rodgers. He's the only one and the former world amateur number one that still he's getting now like this that breakthrough finally. This is his second season, so I'm looking forward to seeing him how he does in the WTA Tour Finals. And if you don't have anything else, we'll close that and we'll move on to our final thoughts.
No, let's go. Let's move on.
Okay, let's go to the final thoughts. You know, U.S. Ryder Cup captain Davis Love III, he says that he can't imagine what it'll be like to have Tiger Woods on a golf cart watching a group of guys play golf. Well, Davis, let me tell you one thing: you're not alone. There's a lot of people thinking the same thing. In an interview that he gave to SiriusXM, he basically said that Tiger Woods driving around Hazeltine during the Ryder Cup could be a spectacle. He said, and I quote, "I sit back sometimes and I even talk to him about it. I can't imagine what it's going to be like to have Tiger Woods on a golf cart watching a group of guys play golf. Half of the fans there are going to be watching Tiger watch golf. They're not going to be watching the golf. And if Tiger goes to check fan positions, how much of the gallery is he going to take with him?" End of quote. So, you know, he said that, and I just remember that ESPN commercial where Tiger is walking inside their Bristol headquarters with a gallery of people following him. You know, he's still the man everyone wants to see, even if he's in a golf cart watching. He doesn't move the needle. He's the needle. As much as the attention will be on the match's outcome, it will also be on him and what he does and what role will he really have on this year's Ryder Cup. But I am sure it won't be a silent role, but he'll be itching to get up the cart and go get a decisive putt and give the fans his mother said fist bump.
Yeah, that will probably be a little distraction with the Tiger running around there. But hey, Phil Knight commented on ending the Nike golf equipment business. He said, "It was kind of an easy financial decision to stop Nike Golf. It was a really tough emotional decision. It was hard emotionally. It was hard emotionally for Tiger. I spoke to him a couple of times. He was upset, and I was upset. It was something we would have rather not have happened, but the financial reality just led us to it." So, and, you know, Paul Casey was quoted this week as saying, you know, "I really love the equipment. I'm really in a great place. I'm happy with the equipment. I don't want to lose it." He's been gathering up all the old stuff he can find that they've got around that's like what he's playing with so he can have it down the road if something happens to what he's using. But he doesn't know what he's going to do because he really likes what he's playing with right now. And, Carlos, I really think somebody's going to pick Nike Golf up. I really think somebody's going to buy them just because of what they've got going. I think Wilson looks to come out a way ahead on this deal with Nike going out. I wouldn't be surprised maybe somebody like a Ping or somebody like that either jumping on there. We'll see. See what happens. I'm sure there's a lot of dealing going on there. In ESPN, Michael Collins, who's kind of a character, asked the question, what makes a great caddy? Being a caddy on the PGA Tour is much more than just showing up, shutting up, and keeping up these days. Everything from being a coach, swing guru, therapist, counselor, and just a drinking buddy. You can log on to ESPN.com and read that, but Michael's always a pretty good read. Ron Sirek has a novel idea to solving the Olympic scheduling conflict every 4 years. Move the PGA Championship to Asia in the spring. There you go. They keep talking about moving a major out internationally somewhere. Take the PGA to Asia. What do you think? That might just work. And finally, Carlos, oh, I got a couple things. Two more things. Gerald Lyle looks like his U.S. playing career is coming to an end. He put on his blog, I'll just read you a little bit here of it. When he returned to pro golf back in 2014, you know, he's had a couple bouts with leukemia. He had 20 events to make about $265,000. He thought, well, that shouldn't be that hard to do. But, you know, he didn't have his strength. He didn't have his golf game. You know, he's trying to find it. He's tried to do it over a couple of years. And it just was, you know, his fitness just isn't there. And it's hard for him to put four good rounds of golf together. So it's just not happening for him. So bottom line, Lyle is out of options in the U.S. and will play more golf in Australia in the upcoming summer. We may see him back again if he gets his world ranking back to where it belongs. It's amazing that he is able to play golf at the level he does after the tremendous fight he's had with his health issues over the years. And we wish him all the best. And, Carlos, finally, I know you were probably thinking about doing this. You're a little slow on the trigger here, but if you're thinking about attending the 2017 PGA Championship at Quail Hollow in Charlotte, forget about it. Tickets for the final 3 days have already been sold out, Carlos.
Oh, man, I took a long time to buy mine. Sorry, I forgot. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Niners Report. This is by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter, our ID is at Back9 Report, with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Have a golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.